I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Welcome everybody to a Sopranos podcast. As always, I'm Joe Spellman, and this is
David Fiedernag.
And this is
Paul Gullius.
And we're talking episode season 3, episode 6. Let me get it right.
That's correct. Yeah.
Let me not say episode first.
Nailing it.
Comes first.
Yep. You'll get it by the time we're through the entire series.
Yeah, I'm really good at these intros. University.
University. And we are joined by an illustrious guest. She's an actress, comedian, writer of many, many, many different things. But most importantly, she's a native New Jerseyan. Sarah Bancasa, thank you for coming on.
I'm Italian and Sicilian native of New Jersey.
Wow.
Oh my. Oh my.
And Irish, but we don't talk about that.
No.
That's it's like okay. Joe is Irish and Jewish, and he leans heavily on his Jewish side, I feel like.
Spicy white. You got to lean into the spicy white.
That's right.
I lean on whatever side is, like, you know, good at
having the holiday.
The current moment, yeah.
Yeah, St. Paddy's Day rolls around. All of a sudden, Joe's like, you know, I'm very Irish.
St. Patrick's Day, I'm very Irish, for sure.
Yes, yes. Sarah, did you watch the show live when it was on at all, or did you watch after it was off the air? Your relationship?
Well, first of all, I'm sure you guys are going to edit. Should I grab headphones? Cause I'm a fucking idiot and forgot about that.
if you want to.
Yeah.
I'm really here for you as an editor, if I may. Excuse me, Polly.
Please do. Yeah.
please do.
My cat is like, ah, how dare you?
Your cat's got some things to say about this episode.
He's like, fucking excuse me. I have some shit to say. That sounds like a bad impression of Adriana.
I thought it was pretty good.
Headphones. We're gonna find out.
I am not cutting any of this out. This is great.
No, leave it in.
I'm leaving this in.
Yeah, please don't edit the echoing of me wandering around the apartment, being like,
the cat crying.
Sarah is wandering around what looks like Polly Walnut's condo.
Yeah, this could easily be like maybe even Ralphie's. I think they're at Ralphie's condo in this episode.
Yes.
Me and Joey dance, and I'm dancing, and soon to be murdered. It's really hot. Oh, Joey Pants.
God love him.
So good at acting. Such a vile character.
Okay, I have headphones. This is so. It's like living in different times. So exciting.
This is exciting.
I mean, this is one of our more entertaining introductions, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, I am a queen.
Usually we're like, oh, so what's your relationship to the show? And people are like, well, I watched it once, like in 2007, and I really haven't seen it much. No, Tony, who's that now?
Now, when you say Tony...
He's the big guy. So he's the big one.
You guys, I don't have the fucking dongle, so I don't know.
Oh no!
Hey,
I don't worry about it.
Fucking
dongle.
Good.
You sound great. Man. You're good. As long as it's not an issue for on your end, then
we'll speak up.
No, it's fine. No, I can totally hear. I just feel bad because I know if you're gonna isolate the voices, it's way easier if
when I'm speaking, you're not also hearing laughter in the background from you guys, because of course everything I say will be met with laughter.
Yeah, we're not getting a lot of echo. True, so
yeah, you're good. You're good.
Sorry, I had to make it a whole fucking thing.
I love it. It's so fucking Jersey. Yeah. Where in Jersey? Where in Jersey are you from?
I am originally from a town called Flemington, New Jersey, which is it's never mentioned on Sopranos. There's one episode where they mention getting the Raritan Township. I think they're like going for the Raritan Township contract for the waste management company, I think.
Sounds about right.
A big deal because nobody mentions Raritan Township, so it was exciting. But yeah, sure. I grew up in Raritan Township. Flemington is the mailing address, and it's in Hunterdon County, which is rural. It's the only one of like maybe two consistently red counties in Jersey in terms of national elections. And it's great. Flemington is amazing. It has only the world's second out intersex elected official, the mayor.
Okay.
Is amazing, and she has a wife and they've got kids, and she does a lot of activism for the I in LGBTQIA. So sure. It's also where the trial of the century, the Charles Lindbergh baby murder and kidnapping trial, was held in
which got a shout out in this episode.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's yeah. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the Sopranos, of course I watched it. We had a family friend, and I remember my mother saying, oh, she really loves it. And like, we all thought that her husband was connected. So my dad was like, yeah, it's like watching Hope movies. And I was like, it's great. And it's very, very grounded in the lore and the legends and lore of the state of New Jersey, for sure.
And your family is still like in that area of the state?
Yeah, they're still in Hunterdon, mm-hmm. and I'm living in a different part of the state because I'm cool. But it's so fucking small. I mean, Jersey's so small.
It is. Yeah, I went to New Brunswick for every Thanksgiving until my father was tired of sitting on the Garden State every Thanksgiving and said, no more. I can't.
New Brunswick, I love
can't
it.
Can't sit in traffic in on Thanksgiving anymore. So we stopped going. But many Thanksgivings were spent in Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, my father was born there. My grandmother, my grandfather, my nephew—they were all born there. New Brunswick, home of Rutgers. James Gandolfini was Mr. James Gandolfini was a Rutgers University alum.
R.I.P.
May he rest in power. But New Brunswick, not the most scenic place. Like,
no, not at all.
Definitely not. Definitely not. And Joe's dad is from Jersey as well. His parents.
Yeah, my dad's from Bergenfield.
Long time. Yeah.
So like up north a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Close to the city.
Close.
But we're Connecticut boys, though. You know we.
Yeah.
Connecticut boys.
Yeah.
Oh, Connecticut. Yeah. It's on the way to Boston.
It's. In a lot of jokes written by Tina Fey.
It's definitely not good enough to have a HBO show that's set in it. Or maybe it has been. There has been one.
Just set it at a pizza place.
Connecticut is the Delaware of New England.
Yes.
Sure.
And Delaware is the Connecticut of New England.
That hurts.
Okay.
Now that we've got our geography established.
Yeah. Enough of that shit.
We could get into the episode. Let's do it. For our people who haven't seen it since it aired on April 1st, 2001.
Ooh, April Fools.
This is the notorious episode in which Ralphie murders a woman carrying his child. Meadow grows further attached to Noah, and they both have to deal with her mentally unwell college roommate, Caitlin. So let's like dive right into it. I mean, this is a tough episode to watch. It's in a series of tough episodes. The one before this was Bobby Bacala's father, and that whole hit getting murdered against Mustang Sally. The one before that was Melfi being sexually assaulted. So this is like, I would say, maybe you guys don't agree with me, like the darkest part of the series. I mean, especially female characters.
I think it's
a series
close.
Full of dark moments for many characters, but especially female characters. and off the bat, we're in the Bing and the camera is like focusing on the Bing girls, which they're usually just, you know, dancing breasts out in the background. But this tells us a little bit that like the episodes, this episode's going to be different and maybe zero in a little more on one of their stories, which is
one of the great music cues of the show. I think the Kink song,
Living on a Thin Line. Yeah. And that's sort of, they sort of
opens and ends. It's a well-used song.
And I think they use it once, like in the middle of the episode too.
Maybe,
but yeah. So throughout the episode, but, the stripper, in question of this episode is Tracy, who we first meet this episode. And we first meet her when she bakes Tony some date nut bread because he told her she should take her kid to the doctor when he was sick, which is like, I would think probably common sense, but I guess deserving of fresh baked date nut bread in Tracy's world. But she is dating Ralphie, which tells you a little something about her sense as a 20-year-old young woman.
But she was also burning him with her kid with like cigarette butts.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we find out later, which is like so tough. I mean, of course, like it's just constant, like even within this episode, like they're constantly like reiterating that cycle of violence, right? Like, or just like bad upbringings that lead to like poor results with Ralphie. Like Ralphie even like talks about how he had to drop out of school. He was going to be an architect and this and that. And then he ends up murdering
Tony's reaction to that, like, to him saying, you know, it's supposed to be an architect. We see Tony like smiling, like eating, like, really?
Yeah. Sure, you were. So. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Tony had a semester at Seton Hall, and I always wonder what his major was. I don't know if it's revealed in the. I'm almost positive it was Seton Hall. It wouldn't have been.
Yes,
I don't
know. Yes, right. It is. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, which tracks because Seton Hall is a private Catholic university, so that would have been higher status and a higher representation of his own parents' presumed rising above where they came from.
Right.
To have a son who could go to a private Catholic university would be a big deal.
Right.
I don't know what he would have majored in, and it's interesting that he even made it there. And I often wonder, I forget now because I haven't watched the series in so long, but I feel like it was assumed that Tony would be enter the family business, but then maybe it wasn't. Like maybe he was elevated in the same way that, is it Jackie Jr. who's sort of like the one who's going to be okay? And in the way that honestly Meadow is in Tony's family.
Yep.
They want better for the kids in the way that they determine. Just like later in the series when Tony's a little disappointed that Meadow is going to law school and not pre-med.
Mm-hmm.
He says to her, he's like, maybe he doesn't say it to her. He says it to somebody, he's like, oh, I just would have loved like Dr. Soprano. But he's okay with the lawyer thing too.
Right.
Presumably as long as she's not working for the Fed.
right.
You know, Tony, that note about his character, which is always said to me, maybe he was supposed to have something more than this. But then you look at a Tracy who was never supposed to have anything more than what he has. Right. That's very clear.
But it's we see the dichotomy between her and Meadow like this whole episode, and Jackie Jr. for that matter. Like when Ralphie's like, kids had all the privileges, you know, like he's had like all the like, and he's like fucking up.
Oh yeah, and Caitlin even Meadow's roommate. Mm-hmm. You know, she has this whole storyline where she is like so appalled because she is not, she grew up somewhere in the Midwest, right? Some small town. And she is not accustomed to like, and we've all done it because you have to do it because otherwise you couldn't go on with your life, but she's not accustomed to seeing something as atrocious as a homeless person with the Daily News shoved up their ass crack. And, you know, we would all not bat an eye and keep on walking in New York City just because we're accustomed to it. And that's like really pretty sad, actually. On subsequent watches, like I sympathize more with the Caitlin character. The first time I watched her, I was like, this chick's annoying. I was also in high school. But I was like, who is, like, Meadow, come on, don't deal with this. And now I'm like, Caitlin is like sort of the moral center here.
Right. Not desensitized.
Yeah. Caitlin still has empathy. Meadow's grown up. going into the city for parties, for family events. She probably got schlepped in as I did for Broadway shows. They probably had friends in restaurants in Little Italy, which they probably said Little Italy, and like went in. And so Meadow's experience of it is she's modeling how she was raised, which is probably once in a while her dad or her mom giving somebody a little bit, but being like, you know, it's so sad, but just ignoring it. And I also think that if Meadow went to Caitlin's place of origin, it's entirely possible she would be horrified by like Caitlin just very easily chopping a chicken's head off, or shooting a sick horse. I don't know what Caitlin does, but it's a culture clash thing too. And
being terrified by the sound of pine trees.
These terms from Staten Island moved to my hometown when we were younger, and they were freaked out. They couldn't sleep at first because it was so quiet, and they were from like a really busy part of Staten Island. Staten Island has some lovely like quiet parts, even though it is a garbage dump. But but they came from a really noisy part, and they couldn't fall asleep for like 2 weeks.
I was born in Staten Island. A lot of my family's from Staten Island. It is a garbage
makes
dump.
Sense. Just
kidding. You would smell.
The best
you,
Italian bakeries, though.
Huh?
It has the best Italian bakeries, though.
Oh yeah.
I will drive and sit in that fucking traffic and go to. And I feel bad saying this because I'm in Jersey and I'm Italian and I'm probably gonna get beat up. But amazing pizza there too.
What's it called? The Ninos or whatever. But I will say that, like, my wife is from the Midwest, and being a New Yorker or Northeast person, going to the Midwest, the one thing is that her family was so quiet, and my family's so loud. I mean, I have like four younger sisters, and like we are very loud. So that was a big shocker for me from from going from the Northeast to the Midwest. Is like, why is no one talking?
Why is no one screaming at each other?
I love that. I love that Caitlin too is she's so excited to go to that like psychiatrist family friend in Vermont, but she's scared of the pine trees.
Yeah, I think like,
as long as I just get past the pine trees. Whoa.
Like certainly like just the writers were using it as a tool to contrast like what somebody like Caitlin like fears and has to fear in life versus what something Tracy poor girl has to fear in life. And did you guys notice like all the match cuts like transitions
Ralphie laughing like through the window when Tracy gets taken away, and then it cuts to them like laughing at dinner.
That might be my favorite one, but it's so disturbing. It really just like made my skin crawl. Like he's laughing at his pregnant girlfriend getting beaten by Silvio. By the way, that was like the first time we saw Silvio being so brutal.
Yeah, be horrible.
I think,
yeah,
to anybody. Yeah. That was tough. But then, like his genuine, sincere smile and laugh in the window, cutting to like the most. Like they were making dad jokes.
Yeah, like suburban couples like dinner.
Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's such hypocrisy. Like just like going from that scene to the next one. Like I mean it was great. It's just wild.
Well, and then we find out later, like Ralphie hasn't called Tracy in like 3 days, and you assume it's because he's back at Rosalie's and like, you know, with his, you know, girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. yeah, that Rosalie's another one. She has quite an eye for men. Where were
there,
we?
Any other of those smash? I mean, the
smash cuts.
The other obvious one too is when the cop and Ralphie are having sex with Tracy, and then it cuts to Caitlin with her head down.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Is there another one other than that one?
There's one where I think like Meadow is walking Tracy's walking away from Tony, and walking away from camera. And then it cuts to Meadow walking away from camera down her like dormitory hallway.
Oh, okay.
So they're really like leaning into Although, like, I mean, again, I watched for the first time in high school, but the first time I watched, I didn't catch these like match cuts. I didn't catch like what,
whoever
what they're trying
it.
To say.
Yeah, whoever you didn't, directed dude? It, he's smart. He's real smart. That guy who directed it.
Alan Coulter.
Alan Coulter, baby.
The guy who's the announcer for Letterman?
What?
Different Alan. Great joke.
Isn't that Alan Coulter? The same name?
Is it? I don't know.
I don't think it's spelled
the
same way.
I'm traumatized to this day by Meadow Soprano losing her virginity. That was very upsetting to me.
Yeah, Tony, the douchiest, that guy, I mean, it's probably, so like, there are horrible, horrible, like, sociopaths in this show, and Noah is by far my least favorite character in the whole series.
Noah's a douchebag for sure. But the way that scene was shot really creeped me out. I don't think it's not done with a. I don't think it's done with a deliberately creepy eye. I don't mean that. I also don't feel that the actress was put in any kind of compromising or negative light. It's not that. It's just that we have not. We've seen this girl's father's sexuality at length.
Yeah,
we have not seen her sexuality. So watching that, if you grow up thinking of her as the child, in that moment, seeing, and it is age appropriate, seeing that she is now a woman or whatever. And also it's like not, it's actually a very well done scene. I hate it, but it's very well done. I hate it as a fan because it grossed me out, but right. It's done well in that, like, it's awkward. It's not like sex.
There's no chemistry. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
But
no,
it's also very intimate. It's very, the camera is right in their face, right in Meadow's face. And like,
it is. And there's no, she's not portrayed as a sexy being, which I think is appropriate in the course of the show. Which reminds me of my mom went to go see when Jamie Lynn Sigler was on Broadway.
Beauty and the Beast or?
No, she was in Cinderella, I think. They might have done like a one night only, or it was a brief thing. I don't know if she was on Broadway or if it was like NJ Pack. It must have been Broadway. My mom went and she said like so many cast members from The Sopranos were there. Like all the like, my mom was like, it was really sweet because the way they like cheered for her. It was like if you saw somebody's loud family at their high school graduation.
Right.
Really so proud of her, and I was like, oh, that's so sweet.
That is like such a great story. That's yeah, you love to hear that.
Yeah,
I also love like when I know I'm going off topic here, but
please
like,
do.
I love when you read about the different characters who got knocked off and how they would have a big meal for them, and have really good. And also when you read about what Crafty was like on the set and how they ate so well.
We talk about food a lot on the pod, like mostly like just like what, like visually like food, like scenes with a lot of food in them. But I think like Joe, when your friend Coco came on, who was on the show, like he was like featured background a couple of times. And so he told us like,
yeah,
the spreads were insane, like for Kraft.
Sounds,
you know,
so great. Like,
I mean, you love to hear that.
You gotta stay in character.
The authenticity.
So
right.
Gotta keep feeding the beast.
I would become Vito if I was on that show. I would definitely become 400 pounds.
Right.
Wait, before or way before, though?
right. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is the best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Yeah, this episode is really special in a lot of ways, and it highlights it reminds us, as the show does over and over again, as Gandolfini himself did in interviews when he did them, I mean, that this is not a good man. Tony Soprano is not a good man, but it's a very interesting episode because we get the opportunity to ask ourselves if Tony does have some empathy to him. If he does, what really upsets him? Does Tracy's murder at the hands of Ralphie actually make him sad? Or is it the disruption, is his own behavior, his disruption of the hierarchy by hitting somebody who's a made man? Is that what the deal is? Is he feeling the pressure and the worry of his daughter dating somebody? Like, what is it?
Yeah, right.
Actually making him cry? We can assume it's Tracy, but not necessarily. Yeah.
But also it's like the disrespect to his place of business. Like, it's his business that he owns. Like, he doesn't say, like, to Ralphie, like, why did you fucking kill this woman? His first response is like, you disrespect this place.
Yeah.
You know?
No, but I think, first of all, Sarah, I think you're exactly right. I think this whole episode is about just like our limits to our own empathy. And we see that in both storylines. And Tony tries to distance himself off the bat from Caitlin when she brings him the bread. Like, I'm your employer, you're an employee, that's our relationship. Because I do think he has sort of this, like, and he would never admit it, but a sort of fatherly instinct towards her. And he wants to nip that in the bud. And because that makes him vulnerable in this situation.
True. He's a sociopath, but he is on the spectrum of, so like anything else, right? Like, if you've known anyone with a personality disorder, there's a spectrum. It doesn't, if when somebody says, oh, she's acting really borderline, well, let's take a moment and acknowledge that there are people listening to this podcast, I'm sure, who've been diagnosed with different things. And, a borderline personality disorder is not part of my personal story, but it is for different people. And to paint them as all one way is incorrect because it's a spectrum of behavior. So setting that example aside, looking at Tony, what his deal is, which I don't think it's that whatsoever, he has been characterized so many times in post-game analysis over the years and critical analysis and everything as a sociopath. And I do believe, and I never know if I say sociopath or sociopath, but whatever. I do think that that's true, but I also believe that it is a spectrum and that you don't have to be all one way. So I do think this is a man who's capable of some empathy and some compassion, just not a lot of it. And his training taught him from day one that he had to smash any of that immediately down. So even when we see it emerge, we see it get cut down right away.
Well, I think he's very aware of like in that moment, like he can't, because Tracy was not his Guma, because he didn't have like any ownership of Tracy, he couldn't express that his anger was because Ralphie killed this poor 20-year-old girl. He had to use the excuse, oh, you disrespect the Bing. But I think his anger truly comes from the place of like, this is so just obscene that you murdered this poor girl who's pregnant with your baby. And, you know, we get a little taste of that towards the very end of the episode, in the Melfi session. You know, he changes her sex. He says like, oh, he died, you know. But it's sad when they go so young. And he doesn't have to say that, Ben. You know, he doesn't have to, but he's expressing, I believe, what is genuinely what he is feeling in that moment. And it's remorse for Tracy. So like, I think there is some sort of heart in him, but at the end of the day,
it's all relative though.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's also, I think that, no, I agree with you, actually. Hearing you put it that way makes a lot of sense. And then I think like, okay, so he's able to feel this for Tracy because she reminds him developmentally, at least, where at least, you know what, not development, chronological age, right? Mm-hmm. Chronological age, why it's very close to his daughter, who he sees as an extension of himself.
Right.
And the only thing Meadow really ever did wrong in his eyes, because he can excuse her dating a black guy for a minute. Like he can excuse he can excuse various things that are against his personal wishes and code. But really the only thing Meadow did kind of wrong was being born a girl, because if she had been a son, she would have been like his sort of, she could have been with that personality and her intellect, his,
like successor a bit.
Yeah, but better. Like she could have been the Tony Soprano of the law firm or of the Meadow Box. On the other hand, though, I think Meadow being born a girl is the only way he was able to really sort of get his arms around the concept of loving her and letting her have a bit of her own personality. With that level of capability and intellect, I think he would have been harder on her if she were a boy. But since she's a girl, therefore she is not expected to be exactly like him. But they are so similar in many ways. It's like he's able to love her with a bit more warmth than his son, who's a fucking dumbass.
Right. he says later in the series, when, remember that scene where he's drunk, he says to Meadow, like, "You're all me."
Oh yeah, it's
You're
true.
All
yeah.
me.
And I think he would, if she looked like him and was a boy, he might also visit some of his own self-hatred on her. But because she's a girl, she's like, and the oldest, she's like, so, you know, she's so special to him. Yeah, and I think that he's so grounded in this cultural code that's so antiquated. But for him to have somebody who's a daddy's girl, who you're proud of and who you spoil, like that is acceptable within the kind of, you know, Italian American Jersey working class code of honor, even though he's not working class. Like he's
a very
wealthy people.
For sure. Yeah. When this episode came out, like I don't know if you remember, there was like such an outcry, because this was almost like the final straw after the Melfi rape scene, which was very graphic.
I still haven't watched that episode because I found the idea of it too upsetting when I was 20 years old. And yeah, so like, I still haven't watched it because I think, God bless her, Lorraine Bracco is so great. And I find her to be so believable in whatever role she embodies. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it would fuck me up to see it. So I haven't watched.
No, trust me. It does. Don't.
Yeah. I think I might never watch that scene.
Yeah.
I think I might never watch that episode ever again. It's quite possible. Like, I don't think there's,
but to be honest, I found this episode just as upsetting, if not more so. Like watching the brutality against this poor girl from Silvio, who has mostly been this sort of like affable, like likable sort of caricature of a mob guy who, you know, has some funny lines now and then, like all of a sudden he's backhanding this girl and says like, that twat of yours belongs to me until you pay me back. Like that was like jarring even back then. And like, but so basically there was this whole huge outcry, and I almost feel like now in retrospect, like obvious, this isn't endorsing like violence against women or violence against women on screen. I think if anything, it sort of shines a light on toxic masculinity and shows you why you need to be very wary about your feelings towards these despicable characters, right?
That's how it feels. It feels like one of the show's episodes where the writers remind us, and the cast does as well by carrying out this design so beautifully. They remind us these people are not the fucking, you know, like my mom has a poster of Sopranos framed down in the basement with like Frank Sinatra and like 1-75 New York Yankees and tragic Joe Willie, because we are a Jets Yankees family, because you gotta balance it out. Yeah, you can't get the ego too big. You gotta go Yanks Jets. It's a real balance. But I know that it's because, it's not because she thinks these characters are cool, it's because she loved the show, she thought it was wonderful. But it is the kind of thing where like when I would walk into a dorm room and some fucking bag of douche Emerson student would have like, before I dropped out, would have like a Clockwork Orange poster up, and some of them, you know, they were legitimately appreciating Kubrick's mastery, and I don't know, maybe they just really like a slow zoom from all the way across the field. But like others, it was just like, you know, that on some level they were like, oh cool, I wish I could just go around and like rape some lady in a rhythmic way and have like fun eyeliner. Like, you know what I mean? There's people who get what the fuck a piece of art is trying to say. And yes, you can enjoy the way it's told. And then there's people who are just like, wow, I wish I could like run a strip club, but like actually be doing mob things.
Exactly. Like,
cool.
Yeah.
And the writers totally anticipate that. And I think that's why they put in a line this episode. I don't know if you caught it, but Caitlin actually says, I think after seeing the movie Freaks, she's like, why is other people's pain a source of amusement? So it's kind of like, why are you putting like a woman being beat to death on screen for entertainment, you know?
And I think Freaks, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No, go ahead.
Nope. Such a great, she saw the Browning, it was Freaks, right?
Like yes.
The
talk,
yeah.
So that's also an amazing fucking example, because like in that film, he was, I mean, and it apparently did horribly at the time and like ruined his career, but it, to my understanding, but in that film at the time, he was really trying to show with empathy these individuals who, yes, were treated as freaks, but showing a depth and, you know, showing that, and they get their revenge. And it's not just like, look at these fucking freaks. He tried to show the relationships. And in that way, I mean, the strippers at the Bang, the dancers, are like the freaks of, they're mostly just decorative, but in this episode, we get to know them a little bit.
100%. Yep. 100%.
Yep. Bitch, give me my fucking NYU MFA in directing for free.
You just made your case. We'll give you this audio clip for you to send around.
There's no interest in directing. It feels like being a traffic cop, and like you, my dealing with actors alone, ugh, you know,
oh, the worst,
gross
actors, but, suck.
I have no interest in being a director, but I would love to just have a certificate that says I'm good at telling people what to do.
Oh, definitely, absolutely,
and not pay $600,000 for it.
I get that.
But yeah, I mean, that's like, anything else covered in this episode that we didn't really touch on?
I mean, those are the two we get a very good little time capsule in the Sunday dinner scene, because Ralphie is talking about Gladiator for the millionth time. AJ goes, "That was so fat," and then Carmella's mother goes, "Aaron Brockovich, now that was a nice movie," and her dad goes, "I didn't care for it." She goes, "You did too. What are you talking about?" That's such a
that's great. That is, that
2001.
My grandparents. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I love that interaction. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Solid, I mean, pre-9/11 moment.
Yes. Pre-9/11. Things were different.
And then after 9/11, every TV show had to write 1 to 3 episodes about 9/11, including Ally McBeal, which did a metaphorical episode involving some sort of a fire in Boston, which, who cares if fucking Boston burns down?
Oh, God.
Well, like, nice try, Ally McBeal.
Sarah, you are saying all the right things to the people on this podcast.
Yeah, let's follow that thread. Let's notoriously, Boston a little more. Yeah.
We love the Yankees. We notoriously despise Boston.
What's the point? It's like a city to, it's a city to, it's like a, it was like, you know, when you see an architect's rendering and like a little building made out of plastic of what the real building is supposed to look like. That's like Boston as a city.
Yeah.
Like, what's the first go? What was the first attempt?
So Philly with seafood.
Correct. Although I do love Philly now because the rent is affordable.
Fair enough. Right. Fair enough. I mean, this is I'm sorry. I said to Sarah, but when I asked her to come on, I was like, be forewarned. This is like probably the saddest episode in the series. We usually try to make this podcast fun and funny, and it's a little trickier around this episode just because it's so brutal.
Like talking shit about Boston, which is great.
That's true. That's true. That's,
if you pepper in enough Boston shit talk, like, well, except for our listeners who are in fact in Boston.
That's so sad though. They need help.
What are you doing there? Get out of there. Get out of there.
You know, COVID makes it rough. This is their little moment of pretending they're not in Boston. Yeah.
It's true. It's
you're
true.
From real America, people raised in Connecticut.
But also, but like, you know, this, we're living in a virtual world because of COVID. Like, try to do your jobs elsewhere. You know, get out of there, man.
David's solution to the agony of living in Boston.
Yeah, please.
Move.
Stop being carted to buy a lighter. Like, get out of that place. Like, come on.
You know, I used to shit on Philly a lot, and now I respect Philly because I realize, like, A, I love their pretzels, and I always have, and B, a lot of hot people live there now because it was a very ugly city for a while, but there's a lot of hot people there now. And okay. I will tell you why. First of all, advances in dentistry, but second of all, people who got pushed out of better looking cities moved to Philly. So there's like some hot people walking around. It's a very diverse city of like a lot of hot people, and they have the worst accent in the world, and that's their
Yeah, but they got
good food.
Yeah,
good healthcare.
I'm a fan of the cheese stick. I'm a fan of the pretzels.
It's Santa Claus. I respect that energy.
They eat horse shit when their teams win championships. So, you know, hey.
Yeah, no, I mean, they'll try to actively murder you for any reason. And I respect that.
Philly the roots. The roots.
If there's
we love,
some
hey, we
hot
love the
people
roots.
There, oh, we then we're good.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of great music and throwing batteries at Santa Claus. It's great.
There you go.
This episode is sad, but like, I don't know. I got sadder when they killed Big Pussy. Like, that was
sure.
Tough to watch.
I often say, like, Blue Comet, which is the second to last episode of the series, that's always heartbreaking to me just because I love Bobby Bacala so much.
I
love Bobby.
Poor Bobby.
I love his love for trains. I love,
There's a fucking mafia war raging, and this guy's out buying toy trains.
Going to buy Lionel's. Yeah.
The dumbest.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, did you guys catch the, I always love their like little Hollywood commentaries when they have like Noah's father, who's like
David
the big
Chase
Hollywood agent.
Hates Hollywood. I love it.
Christopher fucks that girl and she calls her a D.
D-girl.
Great.
She's
great.
So good.
And when he's like, you fucking D-girl, and she's like, I am not a D-girl.
I'm a vice president. Yeah. Great.
I mean, so many great shitting on Hollywood moments. I mean, yep. Lauren Bacall being punched in the face.
Sure.
Maybe the greatest.
Well, what was it? What moment here when he was talking about, I mean, the he was Dick talking Wolf. About how terrible it was for him to do deals for all these.
Yeah, I got
to
watch
all,
their shows. Yeah, they make fun of Tim Daly, who's on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oh, Tim Daly chewing my ear off on the plane.
The guy from Wings? Am I getting him from confused with Stephen Weber?
Edie Falco had a show this year that my friend Tommy was on. It was called Tommy.
Right.
And I was so thrilled. And I was like, Edie Falco played Tommy, who is a tough-talking chief of police in Los Angeles who came from New York, but they shot it in New York. She was like, I guess she was just like, I'm not going. Like, she like didn't want to go to LA. She was like, fuck it. So they're like, all right, Falco, we will shoot this show in New York. So they shot a show in New York, and Tommy played the mayor, the nefarious mayor of Los Angeles, and I forget what his character's name was. And I was like, this is how I know I'm not an actor, because I was like, is it gonna be confusing for you? Because like, your name is Tommy, but then like on the show, you have to like say the name Tommy all the time because it's like somebody else named Tommy. And he was like, it is absolutely not confusing. And I was like, acting is so weird.
Wait a second. Cut. I'm Tommy.
I was like, I don't get it. Also, why?
Can we change your name?
Like, no, it's not. It's like pretend. Yeah. It's not weird.
We cut also, real quick. I'm confused because my name's Tom.
That's so me, I was like, don't you ever just get annoyed? And they're like, why? And I was like, well, because when you say lines, you don't even get to make them up. Like, you have to just say them. And they were like, you are such a simple person. I was like, I don't know. It just feels like saying other people's lines seems like really boring.
It's really
good luck with your career.
I mean, sometimes. It is. Yeah. Sometimes the other people's lines are really not good.
I mean, speaking of hot, like shitting on Hollywood moments, or I guess shitting on how the general American public understands what they understand Hollywood to be. Like, there's a moment later in the series after like Christopher comes out with Cleaver, and I think it's like the big premiere, And the guy's like, oh, so what do you, so does like De Niro write his lines and then Pesci writes his lines?
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live, do they all, they make that up, right? Like that's a real thing that's just a real thing I've heard people say. Like, do they improvise all your sketches? Yes.
Yeah, like all my relatives. It's like, those are actual conversations I've had at like family gatherings.
Do they ask you, hey, when I used to do stand up, they would always be like, when are you going to be on Saturday Night Live? Because that's the only show that they know the name of.
Yep.
Because it's been on for 40
years. That's the go-to.
David, is it hard for you when you act and there's a character named David and it's not you?
It's really hard. I changed the name of the character and I'm like, oh, they can fix it in post.
You should change your name to a less common name, David.
Sometimes when I act and there's a character named David, I'm like, wait, but you're not my friend, David.
Are we friends?
Wait, I don't think we're friends. You don't look like the guy I'm friends with.
I guess I gotta be David friends with you. Yeah.
They're like, you need to keep him away from anyone on this set named Dave or David.
this guy Joe is insane. One last line that I always love is when Caitlin says, I think I miss my ferrets. She's like having a breakdown. That's so funny.
I feel like they had fun in writing this, like coming up with Caitlin lines, I think.
Totally. They were just pitching those lines. But I think watching it, it's almost like comic, like really, like she's really scared of the pine trees. That's like a little, but also, you know, that just like got a big laugh in the writer's room and they're like, keep it.
But, you were just like, let's leave the nuance out of the Caitlin character.
Right. But in a way, like going that extreme with it does make for a better contrast between her and Tracy.
Yeah. And she's, and Ari Grainer, the actress, is so good. I mean, she sells really it good, so
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
Oh, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Chasing it, baby, chasing it. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Shall we get on to fucking internet?
Let's do it.
Sure. This is, of course, the part of the show where we source questions and comments from what the people are saying about The Sopranos on the internet, from Twitter, Reddit, and that's it. So this one comes from user on Reddit, efranklin13, theory from university. In university, did Noah and Meadow's roommate get together? This is kind of a stretch, but bear with me. Meadow mentions to her mom that Noah says he's going up north with his friends and swears he never told her. Caitlin goes to Noah's room all perky and wants to hang out with Noah. Afterwards, when Meadow gets back, Caitlin mentions going to Vermont to visit friends of her dad's and seems almost too prepped with the information. Noah also gets a C- because he's distracted. Anyone else think it's suspicious? Again, I could be totally off base. I wasn't the top of my fucking class.
No, they're not off base. I think that I actually have thought that before.
Really?
It never occurred
to me.
No.
What it read to me, like when I saw it, and I still possibly, I think this, it, I feel like that was an added beat that they took out of the story. That like, but then that also, like, because I think they wanted to set up that Caitlin would continue to be a part of Meadow's life. Because, right. But you know what, like that, like in theory, just work with, let's just throw out spitball in here.
I'm listening.
Along with the person from the internet. Could you see a world in which they took this episode, they had that extra beat there where Meadow was so brokenhearted, in fact, and so upset because she knew that Caitlin was fucking Noah, and they just got rid of it for maybe for time, and also because they were like, you know what, we like this character, we want to bring her back.
Right. It could have yeah, you're right. It could have been a deleted scene that once subtracted from the overall story, it still worked without it. So
it might have also been in the script and not made it to
this,
you know,
is true.
I don't think that person is so off base with that. That notion. It's probably not true, but it would work if it were.
Yeah. I could see that on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
This one from Reddit user Alter757. Silvio refers to Tracy as a thoroughbred, and later Tony kills Ralphie over Piomai. The writing and little bits of foreshadowing throughout this whole show is excellent. I think this is the big theory, because Sarah, I don't know if you remember the episode in which Tony actually kills Ralphie, but in the moments where he's choking Ralphie to death, he says she was a beautiful, innocent creature. And a lot of people think that he was actually referring to Tracy in that moment. And that is backed up by, in the final moments of that episode, whoever did this in the middle of season four, before he walks out of the Bing, the morning after he murders and covers up Ralphie's whole decapitation and everything else, he stops and looks at a bunch of photos, like little tiny photos, like pinned to a wall in the Bing, and he looks directly at Tracy's.
100%. That's true. I mean, this show is all these episodes are in conversation with each other, which is really neat. It's very rare to see. I don't know if there's any episode, like this episode has sometimes been described as close to a standalone, to it. And so, yeah, this in the Sopranos world is close to it, but they're always planting the seeds for future
events. Right. There's very rarely an episode that doesn't call back or even call forward to something later down the line. I don't think they wrote the line of Silvio calling her a thoroughbred, knowing that eventually Tony
they looked at it later and were like, okay, cool.
Right. It just happened to work out. But I do think when Tony eventually kills Ralphie, it is at least equally due to Tracy's death, although it should be more than the horse, conceivably. But let's see this one from user Reddit user NoYuakChat1. Not even gonna,
sure.
Yeah. Yep. Why did Ralph even bother going back in the Bing after the Tracy incident? Just doing some season three rewatching, and I was thinking, shouldn't he have just taken off? Walking back in like that, hand in the ice bucket, seems like an odd choice. Maybe adrenaline? I guess he assumed maybe leaving would make him look just as guilty, but it seems like a dumb thing to do. And while I hate Ralph, I wouldn't characterize him as stupid.
Mm.
I think it's mostly because he knows he can beat a woman to death in the back of the Bing and get away with it scot-free.
He's pissed off that he even gets punched over it, like
that's how little like these women matter in this world.
That's the thing
they extra don't matter because they're not you know, with obviously there's a lot of people who don't matter in this world, but like, you know, you can't even say like, oh, he probably has a family to provide for, because it's not a he, it's a she, and they really just are just like, they're just sex objects, and that's it.
Yeah, and then at the end of the episode, we see like the revolving door, like there's a new woman being explained, like the deal with the VIP room by Georgie, and like, you know, like the more like seasoned stripper is like telling the other two girls, like, you like keep your mouth shut, like, and we just see like the circle of the Bing, you know.
And it plays that same song that it opened with,
right?
Kinks, you know, right. same song, different dancers, and this cycle goes on. let's see, this one from Twitter user Anna Swanson. 6 seasons of The Sopranos, and the most disturbing thing I've seen is Carmela putting cream cheese on hot dogs. Do you guys remember?
That's an old school thing.
Really?
Yeah,
I've never seen that.
My mother never did it, but I knew other parents, like other moms, that did that as a snack.
When does she put cream cheese on hot dogs?
She's making them for
She has them. So the episode where AJ tries to kill himself in the pool, Tony comes home and he's like, "Oh, Lincoln Log sandwiches.
Lincoln Log sandwiches.
I've never had one, or had never heard of one before the Sopranos episode, but Tony, of course, dives right in to the cream cheese and hot dog.
I mean, obviously
sandwich.
I've never heard of that before, but like, I want one of those right now.
I would absolutely eat that.
Sounds too much to me.
Hey, poor.
I'm the half Jew here, I love cream cheese. I love
weird ground meat products. by the way, pour one out for Italian Meats, which are apparently having some sort of bacterial outbreak.
That has nothing to do with COVID. That's just like
the CDC reported. It came from the CDC. No, nothing to do. Yeah. No, the Italian apparently gabagool like attracts COVID. COVID particles.
I don't like antipasta platters, which always made me a true weirdo. But I don't like cold meats of any kind. So
no
like
cold cuts.
No fucking prosciutto. Get that shit away from me. No
wow. Gabagool. Wow.
Thing. I don't want no fucking salami. That's gross.
Wow.
And I don't like any of it. It just grosses me the fuck.
What about
out.
In like what about in like a pasta dish? If you have like the cut up pieces of prosciutto or something, sometimes you get like a penne alla vodka with like prosciutto and peas or something like that.
Is it hot?
It's hot. Yeah.
And it can be drowned out.
it's in a sauce. Yeah. Okay.
I will accept it if it's crispy and hot, or if it's just hot, but otherwise terrifying. Cold roast beef sandwich, I want to die.
That's brutal because so many get-togethers, I feel like, in the Northeast are all cold cut trays.
It scares the shit. They gross me up.
There's a ton of cold cut trays in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Every episode. I mean,
usually.
Okay, so this one from user Blaine's in one. Guys, get some better usernames.
These usernames always suck.
Why does Ralph get shit for killing Tracy, but no one mentions Paulie? So Ralph killed Tracy. That sucks. Thank you for admitting that. But he definitely doesn't deserve as much shit for it as he gets because no one gives Paulie any flack for smothering that old woman. While that old woman was being extremely passive-aggressive towards Nucci, leaning towards aggressive, but Tracy was said to have had a past of abusing her kid and putting cigarettes out repeatedly on his arms. Plus, she was a hua, and she hit him first.
Well, first of all, women are disposable.
Yeah. Nobody knew that he killed her.
I think he's talking about fans don't give Paulie shit. Like everybody, holds Paulie in this high regard, favorite character.
Okay, this is what I'll say about that. First of all, I think everybody acknowledges that Paulie killing that old woman is horrible, but. As TV viewers of a TV show, the writers clearly want us to feel really, really empathetic towards Tracy and not to Min. Like,
right. Because
Min spends so much of that episode being horrible to Nucci.
Yeah.
You know, like just like absolutely like venomous towards this nice old lady.
At that point, I almost feel like the writers are like, can we get away with making the viewers feel good about Paulie killing an old woman? I think they were just like doing tests in the writer's room, like let's see how far we can push this.
Sure.
But
yeah, I don't know many fans that are like hell yeah, I love that scene when he kills that old lady.
Yeah,
that shit was dope.
I played that at my wedding.
Yo, me and my boys, we get together, we watch that scene on loop, dog.
They really did make Min insufferable though. Anyway, moving on, here's our bad take of the episode. This one from Reddit user Varsity Athlete.
Ooh.
Tracy would be alive if she didn't insult Ralph's manhood. Additionally, the correct thing to do would have been to disappear both of them that night, although the whole thing was implausible due to witnesses. Maybe a staged murder-suicide?
What?
Okay. So... I think that in the world of the show, this person is correct. That if Tracy had not insulted Joey Pants' character's manhood, she hadn't, and I just like saying Joey Pants. Sure. She hadn't insulted the dude from the Matrix's.
Ciphers, Amanda.
I think that's true because that's, you know, she violated a code. And so I think if she had not insulted his manhood, she would be alive. And you went with another kid to put out cigarette butts on and such. So that part of the take I will accept because I think in the world of the show, that's true.
Sure.
Like, do you think he would have killed her if she hadn't?
I think so. The scene starts with, actually, it's very similar to the spider scene in Goodfellas, where she comes in and she's like basically the servant, and she insults him then. But I feel like thinking it through, yeah, I don't think if she hadn't like insulted him in front of the guys, he wouldn't have killed her. I think that's the key.
The guys was the thing, was the humiliation.
Right. Yeah.
And especially like Gigi, because Gigi is technically like who he reports to, and he's already like salty about Gigi getting the capo job over him. The fact that Gigi's like, I love this girl, I think that's what really pokes him the most.
Yeah, these women are always just tools terms of for the men to get at each other, to avoid each other, to fight each other, to show dominance, to give gifts to one another. Like, and I don't know that we can really fit Carmella in there in that way, or Tony's mother. But even Meadow exists as an extension of Tony. That's why she matters.
Right.
Carmella matters because she co-created the extensions of Tony and because she puts up with his shit and runs his household. So maybe she does in that way also matter.
And the funny thing is, like in the moment when Tracy insults Ralphie in front of everyone, the other guys love it. The other guys are like, oh yeah. Like, you know, they love to see it. Mainly because they hate Ralphie.
Right.
Yeah. He did the work that they would like to, I think.
Right.
Right. But if it was happening to them, they might have been the ones taking her outside to kill. Anyway, so not to end this on too serious of a note, but this one from user, when I fart, you fart. If supernatural powers existed in the Sopranos universe and a warlock transformed Tony into a big purple snail, how would the guys react? Would he still be boss? I always wonder this on each rewatch. Would they still let him be boss? Remember, Tony lost confidence and seemed to lose respect from some of the guys just when he was recovering from surgery. How do you think these old school, not particularly sophisticated thinkers would look on Tony if he became a purple snail?
Dude, we need to how big is the snail? We need to redo this podcast when we finish the series and watch every episode on LSD, I think. And yeah, then we'll understand what when I fart, you fart is seeing.
Right.
I'm going to say they would treat the snail with respect and sympathy in the beginning, except one character would start the revolution that the snail's a piece of shit and they should kill the snail. And that character would be Ralphie. And then eventually they would kill the snail.
Right.
Sure.
I think that's how it would go. Yeah. I think that's exactly how
it would go. If it's like the size of a snail, he's not lasting that long. But if he's like a big, you know, like weird, like purple snail that's like just like larger than most people, I mean, you know, I think it's going to be hard for them to not see him as a boss.
Paulie might attribute some kind of godlike characteristics to him and be spooked out by him, like scared. Oh,
of course.
But like also kind of respectful. And some of them would have very emotional reactions and try to guard the snail. They would agree. At least one of them would believe that he was going to come back. Maybe Christopher would think he would be like trying to figure out how to make him into a human again. Sure. With like weird bugs and shit.
I mean, now I want to see this episode, but
let's do it. Let's make an animated version of the movie.
This is for you. When I fart, you fart.
That's right. That's right.
We're going to make an animated version. Then we're going to have a separate podcast episode discussing how well we did in answering this guy's
question. We would do great. That's all I got for fucking internet. So.
Excellent. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. Do you have anything you'd like to plug to our listeners?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This has been a goddamn delight. I'm at Sarah J. Benincasa on Twitter and Instagram, at least until I quit one or both of them. And I have a bunch of books out. I would check out Real Artists Have Day Jobs.
Yes,
and
excellent
other books. I'm going to teach you in school. Thank you. Real Artists Have Day Jobs, and a novel about a bunch of kids from Jersey who go on a wacky trip to Washington, D.C., and it's called DC Trip. So check that out.
I love it.
Very nice, very nice. Well, thank you for coming on. Listeners, as always, if you have questions, comments, concerns, things you like, things you don't like, you can email us at osopranospod@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at osopranospod. Give us a 5-star review, even if you fucking hate all the shit that we fucking talk about and you fucking hate the show and you hate our faces and you like fucking want us to die, you can write all that, but give us 5 stars because we really appreciate it. Thank you again, Sarah, as always. Oh, and people, please go vote.
Fucking vote.
Come on,
vote for Biden Harris.
Go vote.
Yeah, fuck
hey,
you.
Bada bing, go fucking vote.
Hey, I know we got all those Trump heads listening to us, guys. Fucking wake up, man.
Wake
you
up
know.
Up.
Come on. All right, as always. Ow!
Oh!
Oh!